Okay, we're going to study Mizmor Kuf Lamed Bet. Kuf Lamed Bet is the longest of the 15 Shirei HaMa'ala or Shirei HaMa'alot, depending how you pluralize them. And it is about Yerushalayim, it seems, although it's not all that clear. And we're going to do whatever what we do when we study Tehillim. Whenever we study Tehillim, there are four methodological issues you got to deal with. Not methodological, there are four study issues you have to deal with, and in some cases, a fifth. The first one is you have to know what the words mean. You have to go through all the words and make sure you know what they mean. The second thing is you have to try to figure out what the structure of the psalm is, because remember, Tehillim are songs. And because they're songs, they're written in stanzas. And depending where you identify the beginning of a stanza and the end of the previous stanza, etc., is going to help you understand number three, which is what is the message of the perek? What is it trying to convey? And then number four, which is dependent on that, but somewhat independent, is who wrote it. Now, I want to spend a minute on that topic. If you ask the average person who wrote it, when you're talking about a perek of Tehillim, they'll just right away say David HaMelech. And then you show them Chazal, who say David HaMelech did not write all of Tehillim. It's fairly clear from Tehillim itself, both from Tehillim that are identified as being composed by Bnei Korach, by Asaph, by Haman, by Yedutun, by Moshe. All right, that's first of all. Second of all, when you find things in which David is referenced in the third person, it would seem that that's not David, because we do not find David doing that in Sefer Shmuel when he speaks. He don't talk about himself in the third person. Only crazy rap stars do that. But he talks about himself in the first person. I plead to God. God said to me, right? And the third thing, which we talked about a few weeks ago when we did B'Shuv Hashem, is that there are many Pirkei Tehillim that their context is significantly post-David, and therefore they're recommended to read them as being composed later. So the fourth question, which you always want to ask, is who composed it? Now, you're not going to necessarily be able to identify a name, and I'm certainly not going to suggest that. But when you say who composed it, the question is, what was the person who composed it undergoing or experiencing or anticipating that caused that? So when you see Elohim ba'al goyim b'nachlatecha timur teichal kodshecha, it's somebody who's looking at the ruins of Yerushalayim and about goyim walking through the Mikdash. When you talk about al naharot bavel sham yashavnu, it's like some of the Rishonim say, it's composed by the Levi'im in Bavel. They talk about not refusing to play and hanging up their instruments, etc. So again, we don't know a name, but like, what's the context? What's the person going through? Es Sinai el Harim, is somebody about to go on a journey? So again, we don't have a name, but we can have a context. All right, so those are the four general issues to tackle when you're studying a Perek of Tehillim. And number five, which applies to approximately 50 out of the 100 Pirkei Tehillim, maybe more, is Tehillim that are used liturgically. Why are they used for that case? So Psukei Dezimra, Kabbalat Shabbat, Hallel, Shir Shel Yom, the extended Psukei Dezimra, Shabbat and Yom Tov. Why are they used for that? Certain Shir HaMa'alot that are used, for instance, Edot HaMizrach, have Kuf Chaf Aleph every evening, on a whole evening. Edot HaMizrach use Samach Zayin, Lamnatzeach Min Girot Min Moshir, every whole afternoon at Mincha. Hashem Ori V'Yishi during Elul. It's like, why is it, like, what's the propriety of it for that case? We are somewhat relieved from the burden of number five when we study Kuf Lamed Bet, because it really isn't used liturgically. If we really wanted to squeeze it, we could argue that it sort of is, because it's part of the 15 Shirei HaMa'ala. And if the unifying feature of those 15 is that they were performed in some, whether it's some suggested as people were making Aliyah LaRegel, or the sung by the Levim on the 15 steps of the going from the Ezrat Nashim to Ezrat Yisrael, you could make that argument. I'm not buying the argument, and we're not gonna go there, but number four and five may connect. So if we can identify under what circumstances this was composed, that may explain also its quasi-liturgical use. All right, we'll see. Let's start with the words. All right, here it is. The whole parak is in front of us here. As always, I don't provide a translation, because translations do more to blind than to inform. Because the minute you see a translation, you think that's what the word means, and then all the possible meanings and the midrashic developments from the word are kind of foreign. So we'll leave it as is. Shir HaMa'alot. What does Shir HaMa'alot mean? We don't know. You don't know, I don't know, nobody knows. There are many theories presented, and the fact that there are many theories presented already tells you nobody knows, because if there was a clear, compelling argument as to what it was, that would be the end of it. There'd be one explanation. But some of the common ones are the Shir HaMa'alot is the context in which it was used, again, on the steps, perhaps as a pilgrimage songs. None of them work very well. Chacham in his Dat Mikra suggests at the beginning of this series that Shir HaMa'alot may not be a description of when it was used or for what purpose it was composed, nearly as much as its style. And it may mean that its style is musically supposed to be ascending music, so that you start low and then build up high, either in tone or in decibels. He makes a different suggestion, is that the lyrical style of these particular songs is like scaffolding, so that, or like steeple, you know, one step building the next. And what you see is in most of the Shirei HaMa'ala, the text itself has a very limited lexicon. There's a lot of repeated words in a short place. Shir HaMa'alot Sinai El Arim Me'ayin Yavo Ezri. Ezri Me'im Adonai Shemayim Va'aretz. Right? So there's Ezri, Ezri, like that. And so that's a suggestion. The problem is it also doesn't work everywhere. So right now we're going to leave it as Tzarich Iyun for some other time. All right. Shir HaMa'alot. Now, Zechor Adonai LeDavid Et Kol Unoto. Right? So we're talking to Hashem, evidently. Zechor Hashem. Hashem, remember. LeDavid. What does LeDavid mean? So it seems to say that David did something, and now we're asking you, Hashem, to remember that for some cause. There's something going on. When do we say Zechor Hashem? When we want Hashem's memory, whatever that may mean, I don't know the theology of it, to be awoken in order for him to act on behalf of or against. So famously, Zechor Adonai Livnei Adom Yom Yerushalayim. We're asking Hashem to take vengeance on Edom for their part in the Korban. So there's something going on here where we're asking Hashem to remember something about David. And what is it about David to remember? Because again, we're still in the dark till we see more. Et kol unoto. All of his affliction. Right? The word unoto is an odd kind of a unique vocalization. But it seems to be his affliction. What's that affliction? Asher nishba l'Adonai. David took an oath to Hashem. Nadar la'avir Yaakov. Avir Yaakov is a rarely used description of God, the strong one of Yaakov. And you find it here, for instance, if you look at page three. Where did I bury it? Right there, sorry, page two. Source four, you'll see that when Yaakov is giving his brachot to Yosef, he says, "Vatesha b'ritan kashtov yafozu zorei yadav, midei avir Yaakov misham roeh even Yisrael." Right? And so Avir Yaakov seems to be a name for God, which is, again, rarely used, but it's used here in parallel to Hashem. Why Avir Yaakov as opposed to Yeshurun or Elohei or something like that is a little unclear. And perhaps we'll get some clarity on that. But notice, Nishba and Nadar are here as parallels. Now, here we're finding out that David made an oath, made a vow to Hashem about something. We don't yet know what it was. But that's interesting because David isn't somebody who makes vows. As a matter of fact, David is sort of the opposite of Shaul in so many ways, including Shaul makes vows left, right, and center and doesn't fulfill any of them. And David doesn't seem to do that. And yet here we hear that David made a vow. And what was the vow? Now, when you study, and some of us right now are studying Daf Yomi, we're studying Masechet Shvuot, you know that the formulation of a Shvua in Chazal is Ochal v'lo Ochal. I take an oath that I will eat, I won't eat, etc. Right? And the formulation of an oath in Tanakh starts with the word im. Asher ani nishba im. I'm taking an oath if. And what you say after the im is the opposite of what you're swearing to. Meaning, it's like if I were to say, I promise that I'll come to your house. Right? You're begging me to come to your house. I say, I'll come to your house. How would I say it? Hareini nishba im lo avo abitacha. Right? I'm taking an oath that if I don't come to your house, dot, 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 and the idea is whatever punishment's awaiting me for violating my oath will be there. So notice the formulation here. Im avo bo'ol beiti, David took an oath that I will not come into my own house and tent, or the tent of my house. Im elel eres yitzuai, meaning I'm not going to go home and I'm not going to lie down. I'm not going to go to bed. Im etein shnat le'enai la'afapai tnuma, that I will not give any sleep to my eyes. And by afapaim is a great example of a word that's misunderstood in Tanakh, because in modern Hebrew, afapai means eyelids, right? But it's clear that in Tanakh it means eyes, and it's used here as a parallel. Shena and Tnuma are parallels. Einayim and afapaim are parallels. Think about that when you say the bracha in the morning, ha-ma'avir shena me'einai u'tnuma me'afapai, which is exactly from here. So that I'm not going to allow myself to sleep. That's an oath. Ad emtza makom ladunai mishkanot lavir Yaakov. Okay, now there's Avir Yaakov again. Until I find a place for Hashem, a dwelling place for Avir Yaakov. And again, we have to figure out why Avir Yaakov is the name that's being used here in almost exclusively in Tanakh. We saw it in Bereishit. It shows up once in Yeshayahu. That's pretty much it, I think, in Yeshayahu. All right, so now, we're turning to Hashem and saying, Hashem, please remember that David really afflicted himself and took an oath that he's not going to slumber, he's not going to rest until he finds a place for you, for your Mishkan. And then we hear, again, out of nowhere, and by the way, these two psukim, three psukim, seem to be a quote from David, because im avo be'ol beiti, it's David's words, if I will come to my house, if I will go and lie in my bed, if I will give sleep to my eyes and slumber to my eyes until I find a place for Hashem. So it seems to be David's words. So who's talking here? Zochor Adonai David is not David talking. Asher Nishba is not David talking. It should be Asher Nishbati. And now we come to Hineshma Nua Befrata. It's unclear who's talking here. The previous psukim seem to be a quote of what David said. And now Hineshma Nua Befrata. We heard about it in Ephrat. Where's Ephrat? Beit Lachem, David. Mitzanuha b'stei Ya'ar. We found it in Sedei Ya'ar. What does Sedei Ya'ar mean? The words, what does Sedei Ya'ar mean? Forest. What does that mean? What's he talking about? What is it that they found? So we're going to get a hint in a few minutes. I don't want to open the curtain yet. We're going to get a hint to what he's talking about. And now, Navoa l'mishkanotav. Again, who's talking? It seems to be the same as the previous pasuk. Hine shmanuha befrata. We heard it. And now, Navoa l'mishkanotav. We will come to his mishkan. The mishkan that David has committed to settling in. Nishtachavel adom magav. We will bow to his footstool. Hashem. Kuma adonai nuchatacha tabron ezecha. Does this sound familiar? Hashem, rise up to you minucha. I'm not going to translate the word minucha right now. You and your Aron. How'd the Aron get in here? And then Kohanecha Yilbashut Sedek V'chasidecha Raneinu. The Kohanim will be garbed in righteousness, and your loyals will sing. Ba'avur David Avdecha Al Tashev Pnei Mashiachecha. On behalf of David, your servant, don't turn away your Mashiach. Who's talking here? You understand the problem? The parak seems to be going between different voices. It starts out with a prayer to Hashem on behalf of David, then a quote from what David supposedly said, and then a group saying, we're going to come to the place. We heard about it. We're going to come to the place. We're going to bow to him, and all this good stuff should happen, and don't turn him away. And then, Nishpa Adonai LaDavid. It could be the same group. Hashem took an oath to David. Oh, okay. I just want to make sure that we got the words first. Emet, meaning this oath is a true oath. Lo yashuv mimenu. He's not going to back out of this oath. And what's that oath? Mipri vitnecha ashit l'chisei lach. I'm going to make sure that the throne is always from those in your loins, meaning your descendants. Hashem's oath that David's lineage will be the throne. But then there's a catch. Im yishmeru vanecha briti, if your children maintain my brit, which, by the way, reads through Sefer Malachim, and you'll see that's not exactly what happened. Ve'edoti zo alamdeim, and this edut that I'm teaching to them, gam b'nehem adayad, then their children, yeshvu l'chiselach. Now, by the way, you notice we have two long psukim. You notice that the etnachta is, excuse me for saying it this way, at the wrong place. Where should the etnachta be in the first, in the nishba pasuk, this pasuk? Where should the etnachta be?
The first word?
Yeah, and the point that I highlighted. Where should that etnachta be? It should
Shuv.
Be at the word mimena. Nishba adonai b'chinat l'yashuv mimena. God took an oath, and what's the oath? Miprivit nechash, shit l'chiselach. And in the second pasuk, we have the same problem. That should be the first half. If they keep the brit and they teach the and they maintain the edut that I'm teaching them, then gam b'nehem adayad yishvu l'chiselach. Their children, his children, will also stay on the throne. But notice what cleverly has happened here, and I try to lay it out that way. This is what we call epiphora, to have two psukim in a row that have the same ending, which creates a kind of a sonic, an audio impact. And this is the real gist of the oath. Hashem took an oath. He's not going to back off, which is your kids are going to be the kings. If they maintain the brit and the Torah that I'm teaching them, then their children forever will be on the throne. That was the oath. Okay? And now we come to the end of the parak. We just started, but it's Shir HaMaala. It's short, but this is the biggest one, 18 psukim. But where you can see, we're starting to get to the end of the parak, and we have all short psukim here, and they are all of one tone. Ki vachar Adonai b'tzion. Hashem chose Tzion. Ivat l'moshavlo. He desired it as the place for him to rest, to live. Zot mnuchati adead. Now, by the way, who's talking now? This is my resting place forever. Who's talking? Hashem,
Hashem,
right? So you understand, Bachar Adonai B'tzion is we're talking, and now Hashem, so that means it's as if we're quoting Hashem. What did Hashem say? Hashem never said these words, but this is how we understand what Hashem's commitment was. This is my resting place forever. Po eshev ki ivitiha. I'm going to live here because I have desired it. Now please look at this passage, Ivala Moshavlo, which we're describing about God, and then Po eshev ki ivitiha. Do you see it's simply the same idea turned into a first person? Hashem has desired it as a place to dwell. And God says, I will dwell here because I desire it. Okay? It's beautiful. So these two psukim are reflecting to like our description of what God said and then the quote from God, Kilo. And now tzedat. Tzedat is a hard word. And people have played with it, textual emendations. I think we can keep it the way it is. We don't have to play with it. And tzedat meaning it's food. Barech avarech. God says, I'm going to bless its food. Now, what does that mean? But I want you to think to Mizmor Kuf Mem Zayin, which you say every day. Kitov Zamra, the Psuket Zimra. Telev Chitim Yaspiech is part of Berach Baneach Bikurbech, meaning it's about Yerushalayim. Blessing the food of Yerushalayim. Blessing the reserves of Yerushalayim, as it were. I'm going to bless the Tzedah, the food. Evyoneha Azbialachim, I will even fill its poor people with bread. In other words, I'm going to take care of Yerushalayim, not only while I live here, it'll be a place of blessing and of plenty, and even the destitute will have what to eat. V'choaneha al b'shiesha. Now look back above. What was our prayer? Koanecha yul b'shut tzedek. And the answer is, koaneha al b'shiesha. I will garb the koanim in salvation. V'chasideha ranein yiraneinu. You see it? Again, v'chasidecha yiraneinu. In other words, we're praying to God that he should establish this place and that he should settle there and that the Kohanim should be filled with, dressed in righteousness, whatever that means. And the loyalist will sing. And what does God promise? I'm going to do all that. But then he adds something. Sham atzmiach keren the David. By the way, matzmiach keren Yeshua from here. Sham atzmiach keren the David. I'm going to do what? I'm going to plant a horn to David, of David. Now, horn, Karen, the word Karen, throughout Tanakh, means a horn. It also means power. right? V'yarem keren mishicho in Chana's tefillah, right? Power. Harem keren Yisrael amecha in Avinu Malkeinu, right? So atzmiach keren la David. It's very strange to talk about planting a keren because kanot unplanted, they grow out of animals. So the idea is I'm planting a strong root of David. Arachti ner li mishichi. I have set up a lamp for my Mashiach. And who's my Mashiach? And here it seems to be David. But here's the problem. Is David alive right now when this is happening? Good question. What is happening? And the end of it is, Oivav albish boshet. I will garb his enemies. Whose enemies? The Mashiach's enemies. Who's that? David's enemies. With shame. Kohaneha albish yesha. Oivav albish boshet. Look at all the twists and turns in this mizmor as psukim are answering each other. Ve'alav yatzitz nizro, meaning the enemies who are in the plural oivav, albish boshet. I'm going to garb them with shame. Ve'alav yatzitz nizro. On David, in the meantime, what will happen? His nezer, his crown, will shine forth. Somebody made an interesting suggestion. I just didn't mention it, but I don't think it is. I don't think it has much merit. Is that if you notice the beginning of the David part is Nadar Lavir Yaakov, he took a vow. And the last word is Nizro, as in like Nazir. Nazir, Neder, nice. But I don't think that's what's happening. There's something else going on. By the way, who is the first Nazir in Tanakh? Right. So the first Nazir in Tanakh is Yosef. In the bracha that Yaakov gives to Yosef, Nazir Echav. But there's something powerful to that because Nazir there means something like he's separated from his brothers, but he's also the crown of his brothers because a Nezer is a crown. V'alav yatzitz nizro. So there's certain evocation back to Yosef in this perek with Avir Yaakov, with yatzitz nizro, right? That's a little bit of part of it. And even the asbi alechem, the motif of feeding, which is, of course, story, maybe playing a role. Okay, sorry, guys. Okay, so this is the parak. Now, believe it or not, we have 5 minutes to go. So this is definitely a two-parter. But when is this happening? When is it being composed? Now, first thing is, we know all the words, see the words. In order to understand it, we have to kind of figure out the breakdown. Does anyone want to suggest how we should break down this parak into stanzas? Because definitely stanzas. And in fact, it's clear that there's different voices here. You can unmute yourself and make a suggestion as to where you think to break it. I probably should have put pasuk numbers or letters in to make it easier to identify. Nope. Okay. Before doing that, and so we're going to work on that next week together. But before doing that, I'd like to show you several psukim that I think play a role in the background of this parak. And the first one is source 2 here. Sorry, source 3. Source 3, you know this. Okay? Vayhi b'nsoa ha'aron vayomer Moshe. And the reason that this stands out is because what happens when Moshe would take the Aaron out to war? Kuma Adonai. Notice Kuma, via futsu evecha, rise up Hashem, let your enemies scatter. Via nusu misanecha mipanecha, and all the enemies, your enemies, should spread out, should run away, flee from your presence. Uvenucho yomar, and when Moshe would put it back down, meaning when the war was over, battle was over, he would say, Shuva Adonai, vota fe Yisrael, bring back the myriads of the soldiers. Right? That's what Moshe would do. But notice how much this seems to be in the background of our parak, which certainly postdates Bamidbar. I'm not going to even play with the idea. Right? This passage of Bamidbar is the earliest of the things we have on the page, except for Bereishit. Right? So now notice the notion of minucha for the Aron. And it seems that perhaps this entire song is not about the Mishkan. It may be about the Aron. Notice the theme of Menucha that shows up here, right? Kum Adonai li Menuchatecha. That's the beginning of the song that they sing. Rise up to your Menucha. Right? And then po eshev ki ivitiha, zot menuchati adead, my resting place. And you'll see that in the Torah, the resting place is associated with the Aron. After all, what is Hashem called in Sefer Shmuel? Yoshev HaKruvim, one who dwells among the Kruvim, meaning in the, that's his resting place, Kehilu. You take a look, and here in Divrei Hayamim Bet, the tefillah that, you know, in Melachim Aleph Perek Ched is that very long tefillah that Shlomo said at the dedication. In the version in Divrei Hayamim, it ends with this. This is not in Melachim. So this is by Yecheni. V'ata kuma Adonai Elohim lenuchecha. Get up to your resting place, which sounds exactly like our perek. Kuma Adonai lenuchatecha. Ata v'aronuzecha. Exactly like our perek. And then, kohanecha Adonai Elohim yilbishu tshua, which is a combination of their request, kohanecha yilbishu tzedek, and God's answer, kohane albish yasha, right? And then Adonai Elohim, al tashev pnei mishichacha. Don't turn away the face of your Mashiach. Zochra lechasdei David avdecha. Remember it on behalf of the chasadim of David, which, by the way, would mean the easiest recommendation to make for our parak. It's composed by Shlomo. And it's composed as part of the dedication of the Mikdash. And David is no longer alive. So Zachor the David, remember that David took this oath and made this commitment and suffered in order to see this happen. And what he was able to do was bring the Aron here, right? And that you should now bless this place. There's a couple problems with it, reading it that way, because look at the end of the parak. The last three psukim are kind of problematic, and they get more problematic as you move ahead. This is our parak. V'chohaneha albish yasha. Which means, what does God say? I'm going to garb the kohanim of this mikdash, of this place, of the city, in yasha. V'chasideh ranen yonenu. That's nice. But sham atzmiach keren leDavid. There I'm going to make a power center grow for David. Arachti ner l'mashichi. And arachti seems to be part of also the future. Well, wait a second. What's happening right now? And the real kicker is oivav al bishboshet, his enemies. Which enemies? Hey, four enemies here. And so what is the whole definition of Shlomo's period? Ein pegara. There's no problems. There's no enemies. So when is this happening? Right? And just to kind of solidify that question, take a look here and we're going to end with this particular part. If you come up to the average person on the street and say, why didn't David build the Beit HaMikdash? What answer will they give you? What's the jeopardy question? What is?
Blood on hands. Blood on hands.
Blood on hands. Everybody knows it. Blood on hands. Where does that come from? It comes from two passages in Divrei Hayamim, by Cheney. Vayomer David l'Shlomo, B'ni, ani ayiya im v'aviv v'not b'ayit l'shem Adonai Elohai. I wanted to build a house. Vayiya alai dvar Adonai Elohai. God came to me and said, Dam larov shafachta. You spilled a lot of blood. You made big wars. You can't build a house for me. You spilled a lot of blood. Okay? And towards the end of David's life in Divrei Hayamim, David speaks to the elders and he says, God has appointed Shlomo to build the Mikdash because the problem is that in the when Shlomo himself turns to Chiram and says, I'd like to build the Mikdash and I need cedar wood and you guys are the, you know, you guys are the Vanon. What does he say? He says, Vayishlach Shlomo Chiram Lemor, source 7, Ataya data David Avi. You know about my father. Ki lo yachol livnot bayit l'shem Adonai Elohav. He couldn't build a bayit. Why not? What do you expect? Your blood? Mimnei ha-melchama asher svavu. Because he was engaged in war. The simple reading of that is that first David had to create a secure boundary before we could build it, and he spent his life securing the boundary as a man of war. And Shlomo says, now we got no enemies, everything's fine, nobody's troubling us, now we can build the Mikdash. So it's not about David having blood on his hands, it's about David being occupied in stage one. Now take a look. in Shmuel Bet, when it actually happens, and David, after bringing the Aron to Yerushalayim, turns to Natan, I'll just summarize this, turns to Natan and says, look at this, I'm living in a nice paneled house, palace, and the Aron is in a tent. And Natan says, go for it. That's exactly what he says, go for it, because God is with you. Hashem appears to Natan at night and says, you told him to go for it? Not so quick. I'm just going to read the highlighted parts. You're going to build a house for me to dwell in. I don't own a house. I've been in a tent. It's been fine. Da, 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 da. And then what does he say? I've taken care of you. I have supported you, David. Tell David this. He's saying to Natan, I've made your name famous like all the famous people. And I've given you a place that's secure. And now, I've told you I'm going to make you a bayit. I'm going to make you a bayit. How do I make you a bayit? It's very simple. When you live out your life, and you die, and you're buried with your ancestors, I will support your child after you, and I will establish his kingdom, meaning I'm going to build you a bayit. How do I build you a bayit? You got to die and have a child take over. We call that dynasty. Then who even a bayit lishmi? He'll build the bayit, and that will be the bayit Ne'aman, as you see. Now, the notion is that Hashem says to David, you want to build me a bayit? First I build your bayit. I can only build your bayit after you're dead. And then he'll build the bayit for me. Which means in the earliest presentation of why David couldn't build the bayit, because the sequence was off. And so David engaged in war, etc., right, to do that. So what was it that David was able to do? David was able to go fetch the Aron. Just to do one last thing, and then we'll break it for the week, is where was the Aron all those years? So take a look here in source 12. The Aron, if you recall, was taken from war when they took it away from Shiloh, out from Shiloh to go to war against the Plishtim. The Plishtim conquered it, the whole story with Dagon, right? The ridiculous story about Dagon and the way that they treated it. They finally realized the Aron was wreaking havoc, plagues left, right, and center in Pleshet. They put it out in the field. They finally sent it after the winter. They sent it to Beit Shemesh. In Beit Shemesh, it also caused havoc. So what did they do? Vayishlachu malachim al Yoshei Kiryat Ya'arim Lemor. They sent messengers up to the top of Abu Ghosh. You guys know where Abu Ghosh is. Above Abu Ghosh, there's a place that was called Baalat. And if you go there, there's a monastery there. And the monastery, which is called Mary Ark of the Covenant, because that's the spot where the Aron was. It's a wild place. And in it, they have a brochure where they'd say this was originally a Baal worship site, which is true. And it was called Baalat Yehuda, because it was in Shevet Yehuda's territory. But also had another name, Kiryat Yarim, which is a lot more palatable for us to say. And they sent messengers up to Kiryat Yarim saying, Heshiva plishtim et Aron Adonai, redu alu oto aleichem. You guys are holy people up there. Levim, you come down and get the Aron. Here it's killing people on Beit Shemesh. They brought it to the house of Avinadav. And they dedicated one of their sons. That's his job, is to guard the Aron. That's where David, years later, goes to get the Aron and bring it to Yerushalayim from Kiryat Yarim. So now, just take a look in our perek. Hinesh manua befrata, mitzanua b'steyar. We heard about this in Efrat, and we found it in Steyar. It seems to be a reference to finding the Aron in Kiryat Yarim. And then they bring it from Kiryat Yarim to Yerushalayim, and that is part of what's going on here. But the problem, of course, is Konecha Yubashut Sedek, Oivav al Bishboshet. So we have to figure out who's speaking and when this is going on and what's the occasion that causes the composition of this parak. And that we will pick up here in Sashem next week after we have celebrated 58 years. And so we're putting Yerushalayim as a sandwich between these two halves of the Shiur.